Hey, welcome back to Rethink, and I'm here with one of my favorite people. We go back a ways.
We do.
I'm with Vinny Lopez, and Vinny, I've interviewed you for different things at church. I know we had like a, you run a I was going to say fight club, but it's more in that training facility and gym, and we'll get into that in a second. But we did a whole thing around training and I interviewed you on that and asked you about leadership. But I want to talk about you today. You know, because
sure?
I do.
Right, and you're sure.
Yeah, we can edit out anything that, you know, might get either one of us arrested. Or, I mean, statute of limitations, but, no, I'm trying to go back and remember how you and I first met. Was it a men's retreat?
So no.
Okay.
The very first time I had a fight. Remember?
Yes.
And,
yeah.
And I brought you two tickets. Because I wanted you to come.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I had been coming.
This is going to turn on me.
Yeah. It's about to turn on you.
Yeah.
I've been coming and you guys have been speaking to my heart. And it was like, it was on me. It was on my heart to invite you in particular. Mm-hmm. And you chose to not come. And you gave the tickets to Scott.
I gave them to Scott.
That's exactly what happened.
Mm-hmm.
That's how we met.
Right. You're right.
There. And then that painted the picture for our whole relationship from then on out.
Oh, you love Scott, you hate me. No, that actually turned into a super tight friendship between you and Scott, though.
Absolutely. Right? It did.
Which that's been going on, and Scott's been gone 4 years?
I have no
four,
idea.
Five, four, something like that. But you guys still, you just tell me you talk to him at least twice a week.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We talk all the time.
That's good. Well, he's a good man.
Yeah, he's one of the few people. You know, you guys, you speak about like, show me who you're with and I'll show you who you are.
Yeah. Right?
So
yeah.
I'm careful about who's at my table.
Right.
Yeah.
I ask anybody, I said, hey, give me a message from Scott Nickel that you remember. And it's that one where you guys are up there. Who's at your table?
Yeah.
I mean, it stuck with me. It's so good.
Yeah.
But so that was probably 10, 12 years ago.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like 12. Yeah. Something like that. 12, yeah. 13 years ago, something like that.
Yeah. So I know bits and pieces. Different people know different pieces of your life, and your life is about to change in a huge way, which we'll get to.
Yeah.
But the other day, your dad, Vinny Sr., reached out to me about some stuff that was on his heart, and then we had a great conversation. And I was telling you about that conversation. I'm like, your dad was giving me great advice, and that's not the life you were raised with. The going to church and dad's hanging out with the pastor and giving him advice and like talk about like where do you come from? Like, yeah. Because I mean, I think that, you know, a couple of weeks ago I taught this is that God can forgive anybody and God can use anybody, mm-hmm. who's willing to say yes. And I think you would say that should be tattooed on us somewhere.
Definitely. That's in my life.
Yeah.
If he can use anybody, if he can use me, he can use anybody.
Okay.
And my father as well. You know?
Yeah. And you're both great men. Tell me about growing up. How was that? Are you from Denver all your life? Tell me about that.
No, I was born and raised in California.
That's the problem.
Yeah, that's problem number one right there. Yeah, like when I was born, my dad, you know, he was looking around. You know, he's looking for identity. He was looking for life. He was looking for a way to provide. He was looking for a way to like call himself a man, you know, so to speak. And so he found, you know, narcotics. And he was in that life for a really long time. All my childhood, really. Mm-hmm. And so drugs kind of came in and destroyed my family.
Like, yeah.
It set my mom on a race with cocaine when I was 5 years old. She's still addicted to this day.
Really?
We still have to, I wait for the phone call every day that she's passed away. She's deep in it,
mm-hmm.
Deep in it. And I don't know if there's going to be, I don't know if there's any way out for her. But yeah, so that's how it started. My dad got kind of sucked into the lifestyle. So that didn't really leave a whole lot of time for me and for my little brother. We were more just like kind of in the way, you know?
Yeah.
So we'd be bounced around
from kind
house
of your
to
own.
House, you know?
Yeah.
My dad's kind of busy doing his thing. My mom is addicted to drugs, so she can't really come and do anything either, you know? So we're getting bounced from grandparent to aunts and uncles. And finally, you know, finally I landed at my grandfather's house, but he couldn't handle me and my brother together. So my brother landed at my grandmother's house. And so we kind of spent a big chunk of time there while my dad was doing his thing. My grandfather was also doing his thing. He was also in the business, so to speak, the family business, we call it.
Yeah.
And he ended up actually going to prison when he was mid-60s, you know. So this life, this drugs, not so much violence, because my dad wasn't a violent person. I was more the violent one. But it was like drugs, women, sex, basically the last service that you just, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It's power.
Yeah.
I was raised inside of that. I was raised without a true home to be in for most of the time. My dad finally, like toward the end, by the time we moved here, he was starting to figure it out, because he was starting to go to church. He used to go to see Raul Reese.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. In California. And he told me stories about like how he was being convicted and things of this nature.
But this is just normal for you.
Like, yeah.
Like this is your normal is, yeah, my grandpa runs drugs. My dad sells drugs.
My mom does drugs. All my uncles and aunts, they're all into drugs.
I just thought this is
my life. This is who we are.
Yeah.
You know, I'm thinking, okay, one day I'll be next in line, and you know, my grandpa, my dad, I'll be next, you know.
Your brother, all that.
Yeah. And that's what I thought it was. Mm-hmm. I didn't really know about any other way of life. Yeah. Until I got here to Colorado.
But your dad's flirting with Jesus, right?
He's flirting like, around.
How did he get, why would he go to church? Do you remember what kind of led him there or brought him there?
I think it was a funeral.
Okay.
It was a funeral that he'd went to. And he told me they did an altar call at the funeral.
Mm.
And he said, he tells the story really well. He said he stood up. And it was like something grabbed him by the back of his shirt and drug him up to that altar.
Oh, wow.
And put him there. And he says, it wasn't me. I literally was drug up there. So that's how it all started. That's where, if you ask him, he'll say that was like moment number one.
So did he, when he explained that to you the first time, what, do you think he just lost? He was crazy? What?
Oh, yeah. I was like, Dad, quit it, man. I remember he explained this to me when we were here. We were going to Victory Outreach for a minute, and Victory Outreach is super like, you know, they like touch you on the forehead and you're supposed to start shaking and all this stuff. And I'm like, dude, if you start talking to me about you were possessed by the Holy Spirit and all this crap, I'm getting out of the car right now. I used to hate that when he'd do that to me. You know, I don't know. I'm still a little, I don't love that.
I don't love it.
So yeah. So we were talking there. And so I was kind of like, I didn't believe him, but I believe him now, because he's pretty passionate about that moment. He remembers it very, very well. Mm-hmm. So that's where it started.
And how'd y'all end up out here in Colorado?
So one day my dad is out doing deliveries, you know, and he said, you know, he said there's a helicopter like following him, you know, and there's an FBI. So he's driving around the corner to see, is this real? Are they really following me? So he's doing a bunch of weird turns. And sure enough, this car is following him around. And he goes, he takes his package, he drops it in his house, comes out, gets back in the truck, following him. And he knew right then, this is over. I have to do something. He literally came home that night, packed us up in a van, and we drove here without even really realizing what the hell's going on.
Yeah.
Like, where are we going? So we came here kind of like to get out of the eye of.
Was there any connection here?
Yeah. Yeah. His best friend, who's my uncle really, lived in Boulder.
Okay.
And so we drove straight there. Lived in his basement while my dad figured it out. He ended up buying a house in Louisville. So we moved to the new house once it was finished a few months later. But it was shell shock for me. It was like, okay, I just left California where what I knew to be family and all my people were there, my friends. They're left in like a day.
Yeah.
So we're here trying to figure out. We're in somebody's basement.
How old?
13.
13.
Yeah, I'm 13 years old.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. We're living in my uncle's basement for a while. Me and my brother are in Boulder. Like, think about it. I'm from California. Yeah. I'm thinking I'm some next generation dope dealer.
Yeah.
and you moved me to Boulder.
Yeah.
And so I start going to Boulder High. That only lasted a few months, though, because I just stuck out too much. Like a sore thumb. It was not good for me.
Yeah.
In Boulder. It wasn't that good for me over here either once I got over here. I was too different. You know, I wasn't a Mexican. I wasn't white. I was this weird Puerto Rican. What the hell's a Puerto Rican? You know what I mean? And the way that I dressed, the way that I looked, it was rough for a minute. Mm-hmm. You know? And then when we get here, of course, my dad has then been bitten by the bug, so to speak, even more so. So he's like really diving into church and trying to change things for me and my little brother, which for me, you know, I give my dad a hard time a lot because I can be a real dick.
Yeah.
But just the fact that he was able to flip the script after it seemed like this is my life, my dad being the one to say, no, I'm going to do something different. I'm going to try to point you guys in a different direction. I used to hate him for that.
Really?
I used to hate him for that because to me, I was next. I was already planning out what I was going to do with my life. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And now all of a sudden you're going to flip it on me and turn away and not teach me how to do this well. You know, I wanted him to teach me how to do it well because he was one of the only dope dealers I know that never went to prison. The only one that's, you know, and so I'm like thinking things are going to be a certain way. Then he went and flipped it on me. So I rebelled against that.
No and way. Got religious.
Huh?
And got real religious.
Real religious.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Shaking and falling on the floor and shit. I'm like, dude, if you don't stop that right now, I'm not coming back to this church ever again. Yeah. But it was.
So what was next for you then? You don't really fit?
I turned into just rebellious, man. Like, I wasn't about to take this walk with my dad anywhere down this path. I was going to be what I was set out to be. So I started playing with drugs at a very young age, 14, 15, selling weed, selling coke.
Is your little brother following you around?
He's following me around.
Yeah.
He's following me around. Yeah, you know, he ended up doing the exact same things that I was doing, you know. Fighting. I was just a mess. I was a mess. I was into gangs. I was into violence. I was into guns. I was shooting, stabbing. Like, it was chaotic. Sometimes I sit back and I think to myself, like, how are you even still alive? You know what I mean? Like, how are you even still alive? Like crazy chaotic shootings and gang fights of like 50 people. And people are getting hit with bats in the head. And I mean, it was just chaotic.
In Colorado. I mean, we just don't think, like, I'm really sheltered. That is all going on out there. We just don't know about it, right?
And if you want to, you can go and find it. And I wanted to.
Yeah.
So I went and found it. I went and found some people who were wanted to go down the same path that I wanted to go down, you know, and we just wreaked havoc on ourselves, on everybody else around. And it was a crazy, terrible time for me.
I remember sitting around a campfire up at the cabin with you and some other different guys. And we started just telling those war stories about stupid stuff we'd done. And I talked about, like, in high school, I smoked a lot of weed. And then you guys started talking about the deals and the stuff. And I was just like, I am so out of my league here. I just want to get my drug around. But I mean, it's like when you say, I wonder why I'm still alive, it's like God kept you alive for some reason, right?
Man, he really, really did.
Yeah.
He really did. And looking back, I can see almost like my dad tells this story of him getting pulled by this collar up to that altar.
Yeah.
For me, it was like, I look back and I can literally see him like just moving me half an inch to the left or half an inch to the right, like carrying me through. You know, I was in prison for a long time. I spent 9 months in the hole one time, losing my mind.
Yeah.
Losing it, you know. But yeah, like, I'm in high school. I'm messing around. I'm selling drugs. I'm flunking out of high school. I didn't give a crap about school at all. But then things started to get like bigger for me, like bigger deals, bigger money, like bigger risks being taken. So right around like 2023, you know, I started moving things across the border, you know, from Mexico to here, from Europe, you know, taking bigger risks.
Yeah.
And finally, I sent this kid across the border, and when he came back with the feds. So he set me up. He set my little brother up. And Christian was also involved in that.
Yeah.
And, we all ended up getting about a 5-year sentence. So I went to prison.
Yeah.
When I first showed up in prison, my little brother was in the building that they put me in because he went first, you know, because I fought mine a little longer. I had a couple more bucks to my name. So I was like, screw this. I'm going to keep fighting it.
Yeah.
Even though I knew it was, I was going to go at some point. I was just trying to hold off.
Yeah. So I remember in some of our talks before, probably the biggest emotion that was going right then was just a ton of anger. Oh, like the anger was driving.
That's still my go-to. Yeah. That's still almost every emotion that I have can still at times siphon it way down to anger.
Mm-hmm.
Or at least I mask it with anger. But yeah, man, I'm running around. I almost was trying to hurt myself. Mm. I remember feeling that way. Like I would be the first one to like volunteer to go first on the front lines. You know what I mean? To like be the first point of contact with whatever altercation we were going to get. I would always volunteer. And I'm like, what was I doing? It was almost like I was a little bit suicidal in a way, like a little bit like, take me. I don't give a shit.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah. And so you say that. So I think that, you know, with your size and just you have a look, right? You're the gorilla, right? And I mean, you're intimidating at first, but I gotten to know you, and it's like you're a guy I want in my corner because there's this tender side of you too that when I see you with, you know, Jen, or when I think about what's coming, or when I think about with your kids, or when I've seen you, because you do men's ministry. We do a lot of men's ministry together, right? And there's something changed. Right? What changed that took the guy that wants to kill everybody in front of him, wants to hurt, wants to do all right? Because that's not you anymore. Mm-hmm. What can you, so your dad can go, I remember this, you know, can you remember a time when like, it might be a season, it might not be a minute, a season when like something's got to change in my life. Do you know what that was for you? Because I think there's a bunch of men listening right now going, well, I'm with you up to this part, but I'm still stuck there, right? So, like, what was a defining moment? What was a change? You said something has to change. I don't want this anymore.
Yeah. Well, I mentioned I went to prison.
Yeah.
And I mentioned doing those nine months in the hole. That I always fall back to that as being like a big moment of change in my life, just because of the darkness I descended into, like a place of darkness that I'd never experienced before. Just hallucinations and things of this nature, where I was trying to see myself in the. They have these plastic mirrors in prison. Right, it always distorts your face where you can't really get a real reflection of what you look like. So I'd be like trying to look in there to see what I look like, and like I was losing it in there. I think once I got out of that place, finally got out of there, I had to go like on a hunger strike for them to get me out of this hole. It was crazy. It was crazy. The whole ordeal was crazy getting out of there. But once I got out of there and like got out to like see the light again, to walk more than 5 feet in one direction. I was like, I can't do that again. I can't be there again. I never want to go that far down ever again. And I still had a lot of time to do still at that moment. But it was in the second half of my prison sentence that I started to think about, like, I don't know, maybe the hole broke me. It like broke me being in there. It broke me. It snapped off this like layer of armor that I thought was impenetrable. I got penetrated. And when I got out of there, I remember feeling for the first time, like feeling soft, like feeling like, okay, I'm not a monster. I thought I was a monster before that. I thought I was a monster and nothing could touch me. Like, I'm going to live forever. I'll kill you. I don't give shit on none of you. But when I got out of that hole, I was broken, man. I was broken and I felt like tenderness for the first time. Like I could be touched. Like I could feel sadness and fear really crept on to me, you know? And I remember having some real conversations with God in that hole. And they were more like, when I first got there, I was like, I'll do my own time. I don't need you to do my time for me. And I already knew God. I knew God already. Remember I told you my dad was taking me to that crazy church?
Yeah.
I knew God. I knew who God was. I'd been learning about him. And thank God that I had. Thank God my father had the balls to flip it around, because if I hadn't known God in that moment, I don't know where I would have ended up when I got out of that hole. But I did know God. And I did have conversations in there about, like, I'm not going to use you to do my time, because I would see all these guys. They'd get to prison, right? And then they'd huddle up together and they'd be like, we're just going to read the Bible today.
Yeah.
And blah, blah, blah. And then the minute they got out, they would be back at the strip club and I would see them there. They'd be back calling whoever up and this and that. And I was like, I will not be that. I won't be a fake and have you do my time for me here and then get out and flip it on you. But it was more like, no, I'm not going to do that. I'll talk to you when I get out. I'll talk to you when I leave here. I'll talk to you when I get out of here. And I remember feeling those types of conversations with God. But as soon as I got out of that hole, it was like, okay. I started to like look upwardly in a little bit more of a real way. It wasn't all the way there yet, though, because I was still very much like cautious of me doing it simply because I was in a bad place. And I hate people that do that.
Yeah.
I don't like it.
Yeah.
It bothers me in a big way. Probably still to this day, it bothers me. So I got out, finally got out of prison. And the old version of me started to creep back in like they always do. And I knew that was going to happen. That's why I didn't choose to lean into God while I was in there. It's because I knew I was going to turn into the same animal that I always been, you know?
It's all you know.
Yeah, it's all I know. So I got out and I started dealing again. I started going right back to it. I'm like, what in the hell is going on here? I did this one big thing, this one big weed thing over the state lines, and I knew I didn't have it anymore. I was terrified. I was so scared. I remember like looking over my shoulder. I'm driving. I'm shaking. I'm like, oh my God, I can't do it anymore. I got to be done. You know what I mean? And then that's when I was reintroduced to the gym floor again, like the training mats, my gloves, because I didn't have any options. I'm like, okay, okay, you literally can't do anything. You can't sell drugs anymore. You're not very hireable. You have 3 felonies. You know what I mean? So I always loved training. I always loved working out. You know that I've been training, lifting weights for my whole life. So I'm in this gym, I'm lifting weights, and my buddies are up there, my buddies that I know from before I went in. They're training and sparring and training. And they're like, come up. And I was like, all right. I went up there, I started training again. I fell back in love in a big, big way. Fell back in love. And I felt the same way when I got off. You know, these guys are the best in the world at the time, like these sparring partners, my training partners. And I would go in there and I would get my ass just handed to me, Jim.
Really?
Like beat down, badly beat down. but it felt so good. It felt the same way that it felt when I left the hole.
Huh.
That tenderness, the softness. I get, it's almost like I had to get it beaten off me again. Like the hole broke me. It broke me. It took that layer off, right? But then it started to build back up, right? When I got out, I've got this thing again. I'm a monster again. I'm this. Until I hit that gym floor with real monsters, mm-hmm. real trained monsters.
Wow.
That beat the brakes off of me. And I would leave just broken again. Like, I'm broken again. I'm soft. I'm tender. I can feel. I can cry. You know what I'm saying? I can look at my daughter with like softness. And I was like, I need this. I need this in my life. So then the armor would build back up again. And then I go boom, 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 leave. And I'm like, thank God. And then in those moments of like softness, of tenderness, when I get off the gym floor, I would be able to like look up, you know? And that was right when I started coming to see you. And hear you and Scott speak. My dad was begging me to come. He's like, man, I find a good church this time. I swear this one's good. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, sure. Here we go. They're going to go in there. They're going to be dancing all in the aisles. And, you know, but in those few moments of softness, and then they would last a little bit longer every time, right? Like, so first time I get off the gym floor, get beat up, I feel softness for like a day. And then maybe like, 6 months later, it's lasting like 3 days into the week. You know, maybe mm-hmm. 6 months later, it's like, okay, now I'm feeling this thing, like week long thing where I'm walking lighter. And so my heart felt more open to receive. You know, I was open to hear. I was open to feel. And so that's when I started to come and see you guys and try it out. Like, I would use you guys as like, all right, let me
find something wrong here.
Let me listen to this and see what the heck these guys are talking about. But the way you guys put it, like, you guys would be like, try it out for a week. Let me know how it goes.
Mm-hmm.
And that was exactly what I planned on doing anyways.
Yeah.
So you guys would speak. You guys would give me like a tangible thing to lean into. Try it out for a week. And then, and it would be like, oh, wow, that does feel good. That is working. Wait a minute. I do feel this. And then finally, I'm like, week after week, just kind of more just hearing the good advice at first. It wasn't about Jesus for me early on.
Right.
Just like, oh, this works. It's a great idea. Oh, this works. Practical. That's a great idea. I'm going to try that again. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, I'm like starting to like see and hear Jesus in different places. Different moments in the car, like process things through a little bit of a different lens based off of what I'd heard you guys speak of the week before, you know, and start to lean into Jesus. And then I decided to like build my own real relationship with Jesus. Cause that was also one of the good pieces of advice you guys gave, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And yeah, man, once I started to do that in a big way, and it wasn't like, dude, I did that and I was still like, right when that happened really is when things got even worse for me, if I'm being honest. You know what I mean? Like, as far as like the pull.
Yeah.
The pull. True. Satan started to fight for his soldier.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, it's true.
He wanted his monster back.
Yeah.
And so he started to like tug at me. And try to pull me in other directions. And he would be successful at times, you know. Right. He'd pull me in deep into the darkness. And inside of that is when I met Jennifer, my wife.
Yep.
We had met before, but we had really met in a little bit of a darker setting.
Yeah.
We were both being attacked. Neither one of us knew it. Like, I just see her as just a girl. She just saw me as just a guy. You know, we're friends and all, but I didn't know that she knew Jesus too.
Right.
I didn't know that she was also being attacked in the same way that I was. I thought she was just a chick who liked it there.
Yeah.
She thought I was just a guy who liked it there until we started actually talking.
Right.
Started talking and like laying next to each other, scratching the surface of it, like, because the talks would get deep, and then all of a sudden we find out, wait a minute, you want something better too?
Yeah.
You, you love Jesus too? Wait, what? And we're sitting here together in this place?
Yeah. Yeah.
Craziest thing, man.
Yeah, so before all this started rolling, I didn't know you have a baby coming this summer.
I do.
Right?
I do.
And you said, I'm looking for, because you have two other kids.
I do.
Right? And yeah. How old are they?
25 and 17.
20. And there's, you don't get a rewind, and you don't get a do-over or something like that, and you have good relationships with your kids, right?
I do, yeah.
Now, I think there are different times when all parents, yeah, I totally right. get it, right? But, like, you're looking forward to you and Jen having this little, I don't know if you want me to say the gender or not, but it's like you can have this little baby.
Yeah.
And what are you most excited about with this? You mentioned it ahead of, earlier before this is all on, but.
Yeah, I am most excited to be there day in and day out. I'm most excited to tuck her in, not only on a Friday night and a Saturday night.
Yep.
I'm looking forward to reading books on Tuesdays and Wednesdays and Thursdays.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to being like an actual father and not the weekend fun dad. Yeah. You know what I mean? Who always has to make things fun.
Yeah.
You know, it's also the biggest fear for me.
Okay.
Is that, you know, not so much fear that I'm going to do it wrong. More, maybe fear is the wrong word. It's shame. Because my other babies didn't get that.
Yeah.
And I love them to death.
Yeah, I know you did.
And I hate to feel like I'm cheating them in any way. Mm-hmm. So part of me looks at it and goes, you son of a bitch. Yeah. Like,
have you talked to them about that?
Yeah. Yeah, I did. I have.
Because it's almost like that conversation would be honoring to them, mm-hmm. you know, because you don't get a do-over. You just, that's what we talk about. All you have is from this point on, right?
Yeah.
You know, and you get another shot at this, but that doesn't, but you can still heal up some of the stuff. We don't have to carry guilt and shame around.
Right.
Right. So let me kind of land this, because I think there's a bunch of guys that are going to listen to this and they're halfway through it and they're like, how do you change? Like, and is it worth it? Like, what's the, you did it. How can a guy out there, like, what are the questions he has to ask himself? What are like the decisions he has to make? Like, what, I mean, God can save anybody and God can use anybody. Right. But you had to make some choices and decisions. Right. So what would you say to a 25, 26 year old guy out there who's going, you know what? This is all I know. I don't know how to be a good husband or a good father I don't know how to do any of that. This is just my life. And that's where you were at a certain point. Yeah. And you had to end up in a hole.
Yeah.
Which God puts us in holes sometimes. Mm-hmm. Right. It's like now, you know, I call them like a tunnel.
Yeah.
You go into a dark tunnel and you look. Maybe it's at a light at the end. It's just, no, it's a train running over you, you know? Yeah. And eventually God teaches you something in that tunnel, right?
Right.
So words of advice from Vinny Lopez, right? It's like what, there's a young guy out there who's just doing all he knows to do, right? And doesn't think he can turn his life around. Doesn't think he can be a good dad, a good father, good husband, right? Right. What would you say to him?
I would say first, make a real man-sized decision about where the heck it is you want to head.
Okay.
Right? Where it is. Figure out what you're aiming at. What's the target? Second, I would make sure that I surround myself with people who are headed in the same direction.
That's good.
It don't work. It will not work unless you do that.
It won't.
And that's why I leaned into guys like you, guys like Chris Mosier, guys like Scott Nickel. You want to know why I call him twice a week? Because I have to. Yeah. I literally have to. If I don't, I don't trust myself.
Mm-hmm.
I'm one of those, mm-hmm. you know, it's deep in me. And then third, you got to be prepared to knuckle up when you get thrown off course.
When.
It's right. 100% going to happen.
Yeah.
And you better figure out whether or not you're going to grab yourself yeah. and keep heading in the direction you said you were going to head, mm-hmm. or are you going to fold? Like, it's like there's these moments that they keep happening. Last week, you know, for me, I run into them. Like I said, Satan don't, he's never going to stop fighting for me.
Right.
He's never going to stop.
Right.
But like, I've made a decision that when it gets ugly and when it gets hard, I'm not just going to use that as a reason to pull my focus off of where I said I was going. Like you have to be prepared to fight when it gets ugly.
Yeah.
And fight in a way that's going to keep you on course.
Yeah, it's good.
You know?
You know, the other thing that, and I taught on this a few weeks ago, is the very thing you think ought to disqualify you is the thing God will leverage. And, you know, you and I have done a lot of men's retreats together. Yeah. And I, when I stand up and speak, the heads all turn because, oh, it's a pastor of a big church.
Right.
When you stand up and speak, it's your story.
Yeah.
Like, you're one of the most influential men at these men's retreats. Not because of your size, not because of your you know, right. I mean, you train world-class fighters. You travel the world with fighters. You have a successful gym. You have a great, you know, beautiful wife, a baby on the way. It's like, right, that's not, it's like your story that you just shared here. Like, I have my sermon. Scott has his sermon. You have yours.
Right.
And it's your life. And people pay attention to a changed life.
Yeah.
And so you have to make a decision, right? You have to surround yourself. You got to knuckle up. But I think one of the things that helps us is, like, you can't apologize for your past.
No.
You know? But you can't leverage it. Right? Your story is your story.
Right.
Right? And I think you do that well. One of the best. I'm glad you're in my life. Yeah. And I can't wait to do another retreat. Yeah. You know, and another one and another one. We went to Africa together.
I know.
And did retreats, you know? And again, I'm Pastor Jim, but you're Vinny. And your influence in the kingdom is amazing. So I'm glad God brought us together. All right. And congratulations on the baby coming up.
Thank you, brother.
All right. Thanks.
Appreciate you.